Good morning, dear Sangha. Today is January the 4th, 2012. And we are in the Assemblies of Stars Meditation Hall of the Lower Hamlet, Plum Village, during the winter retreat. During the last 6 days, we have talked about applied ethics. I live in a community of monks and nuns and lay practitioners. And I am a teacher. And I like to be with my students, my disciples. I spend time with them not only in the classroom, but also walking, sitting, sharing about Dharma, eating together, and organizing so that other friends can come and practice with us. And I like to do it together with my students and disciples and friends. And I enjoy doing that. It's very nourishing and healing to be with your community, your students, your friends. And I get a lot of joy and nourishment and healing from that kind of life. I think it is possible for school teachers to do the same. They should enjoy their class. They should enjoy their students. And every time when they think of their students, their class, they should feel, should be able to feel the kind of happiness. I think it's possible to transform our community, our classroom, into a family where a good relationship can be established between teacher and students, and so on. And when you like the classroom, when you like your children, students, you enjoy more your job as a teacher. And it is possible to transform your class into a family. There should be good communication between teachers and students. And one of the ways is to talk to each other about our suffering. Teachers, they have their own suffering, and students, although they are young, they already have a lot of suffering. So there should be times when teachers and students talk about their suffering. You tell them about your suffering as a teacher, your happiness as a teacher, and you want them to tell you about their suffering as a student, as children in a family, and you listen. And if you know how to listen to them with compassion, with love, you can help them to suffer less, and you can invite them into the kind of practice that can help them to suffer less. So we can start like Buddha, talking about suffering first. And when you talk about suffering, you have a chance to talk about happiness. And it is possible to be happy together as teachers and students. The classroom is a second opportunity for a child, because the child may not have got the love and the happiness in the family. Maybe their parents fight each other and make them suffer a lot. They did not have a chance to learn how to love, how to experience happiness in family life. So as a teachers, we have an opportunity to give them a second chance by transforming our class into a family. And there must be ways in order to do that. And teachers have to practice, have to master the practice before they can offer the practice to their students. And the practice can be very joyful, very pleasant to do. And when we speak about applied ethics, we talk about that kind of practice that can be healing, transforming, nourishing. And we do not have to suffer during the time we practice. Suppose we talk about mindful breathing. You have to enjoy mindful breathing, because mindful breathing can bring joy, can help us to handle painful feelings and emotions. And when the teachers are able to do that, they can naturally help their students to do the same. Because students, even they are young, but they are victims of their strong emotions, painful feelings. They don't know how to handle these painful feelings and emotions, and they suffer. And if you understand the suffering, if you listen to the suffering, you say that, I also have suffered, and I have done like this, and I suffer less. I was able to transcend. Would you like to learn? And they will listen to you. So transforming the class into a community, where communication between teacher and students is possible, is something we should be able to do. I think in teachers' college, we have to learn these things. Because teaching is not just to transmit the knowledge. This is also can help you transmit your knowledge much more easily when students are happy, relaxed, and then the work of teaching and learning become much easier. It's a joy. So this retreat for educators is a little bit too short for us to have a chance to master all these practices in order for us to go and help our students. But we can continue. The retreat can be a beginning, and we can continue after we go home. And we will be able to master these very concrete practices, and then we can help our students to do the same. Suppose when we practice the first exercise of mindful breathing, breathing in, I know I am breathing in. Breathing out, I know I am breathing out. That is the first exercise of mindful breathing proposed by the Buddha. It's a very simple exercise, but it can bring a lot of calm and happiness. And while I breathe in and breathe out mindfully, I don't have to suffer. In fact, I enjoy. I enjoy breathing in. I enjoy breathing out. Breathing in, breathing out is not hard labor. It is a very pleasant thing to do, especially when your nose is free and the air is fresh, is good. So wherever you are, you can enjoy breathing. And when you breathe in and out mindfully, you not only you enjoy, but you can stop the thinking. If you are truly breathing in and out mindfully, you don't think anymore. You are not carried away by your thinking. I think, therefore, I am lost. So stop the thinking, just enjoy your in-breath and out-breath can already bring well-being into your body and your feelings. And that exercise, I call it the identification of the in-breath and out-breath. When you breathe in, you know this is your in-breath. You are aware that an in-breath is taking place. And when you breathe out, you know that an out-breath is taking place. And when you use your mind in order to identify the in-breath and out-breath, there's no more thinking. Breathing in, I know this is in-breath. That is not thinking. That's recognizing what is going on. And what is going on is your in-breath, your out-breath. And you can also enjoy your in-breath and your out-breath. That is the first exercise proposed by the Buddha to identify the in-breath as in-breath and out-breath as an out-breath. And the effect can be very deep, because when you pay attention to your in-breath and you go home to your body, insight might happen. Oh, I have a body. And when mind and body are together, you are truly in the here and the now in order to live your life. So please do not underestimate this easy exercise. Even if you have practiced 10 years or 20 years of mindful breathing, this remains a very wonderful practice. And you get more and more benefit from that exercise. The second exercise is to follow your in-breath all the way through. Breathing in, I follow my in-breath from the beginning to the end. There is no interruption during the time of your in-breath. And by breathing in like that and focusing your attention entirely on your in-breath, you cultivate concentration. The object of your concentration is your in-breath. Not a millisecond is lost because you are entirely with your in-breath. So you dwell very solidly in your in-breath, no more thinking, no more the past, no more future. You are really enjoying in your in-breath. And during the time of breathing in, many kind of insight may happen to you. Like, breathing in, I'm alive. And you can celebrate the miracle of being alive just by breathing in. That is happiness already. You don't have to go and look for happiness elsewhere. Just sit there and breathe in and enjoy the fact that you are alive. Or when you walk, if you practice mindful breathing, you might recognize that it's a wonder that you are alive and that you are making steps on this beautiful planet. And happiness comes right away. Happiness is not made of money and fame and power, but just by mindfulness of breathing. So the second exercise is to follow your in-breath and out-breath all the way through and enjoy all the way through. And by doing so, you cultivate more concentration. Because mindfulness and concentration, they are of the same nature. It's like water and ice. And the third exercise is to become aware of your body. Breathing in, I'm aware that I have a body. Sister Gina has given a Dhamma talk about how to breathe in order to go back to your body and touch the wonder that is the body. And if we know how to be in touch with our body, connect with our body, we will connect with Mother Earth and the whole cosmos. We begin with our in-breath, and our in-breath, with our in-breath, we go home to our body. And going to our body, we go home to Mother Earth, and we touch the whole cosmos. And when mind and body are together, thanks to this exercise, we establish ourselves in the here and the now. We are truly alive. When mind and body are apart, you are not there. So the breathing is to bring mind and body together. And when mind and body are together, you are established in the here and the now. You are truly alive. That is the moment when you are truly alive. Because when mind and body are together, you can touch the wonders of life in you and around you. And that is life. Breathe, you are alive. And when you are with your body, not only you touch the wonders that is the wonder that is your body, but you may realize that there is something in your body that should be transformed. That is the tension, the pain. Because living in forgetfulness, we have allowed the tension and pain to be accumulated into our body. We have a lot of stress. Modern life has allowed a lot of tension and stress to be accumulated into our body. So that is why the fourth exercise is to release the tension in the body. Breathing in, I release the tension in my body. That is the fourth exercise proposed by the Buddha. When you breathe in and come back to your body, you might notice that there is a lot of tension in your body that does not allow you to be relaxed and peaceful and happy. And you are motivated by desire to do something in order to help your body suffer less. And while breathing in and breathing out, you might just allow the tension in your body to be released. And that is the practice of total relaxation in whatever position of the body you are. Lying, or standing, or sitting, or walking, you can always release the tension. Sitting on the bus, you can practice breathing and release the tension. walking to the classroom, walking to the meditation hall, you might like to allow the tension to be released by each step. You walk like a free person. You enjoy every step you make. You are not in a hurry anymore. And that way you release the tension. When you walk from the parking lot to your office, to your classroom, why don't you practice the fourth exercise of mindful breathing? We can arrange so that we can afford to walk like a free person, as a free person, and release the tension in our body with each step. And that is the style of walking we adopt in Plum Village. You are supposed to walk like that. Every time you need to move from one place to another. So breathing in, I am aware of my body. Breathing out, I am aware of my body. Breathing in, I release the tension in my body. Release tension in body. And we don't need set time apart in order to practice. We can practice all day long and get the benefit of practice right away. Sitting on the bus, driving a car, taking a shower, cooking breakfast, we can't enjoy doing that. We cannot say, I have no time to practice. No, plenty of time. And this is very important. And when you do like that, you practice and you get the relaxation, the joy, that is for the profit of your students. You do that for them. That's an act of love to practice mindful breathing. And you have peace, you have relaxation, you have joy. And you become an instrument of peace, of joy, and you can help. I think it is the good teachers that will be able to change the world. It's my belief. Because a teacher can nourish, can heal, can build healthy, happy human beings. And they can get a lot of joy doing so, very meaningful. And we enjoy deeply our task as a teacher, an educator. Therefore, as a teacher, we should be able to master this kind of practice. And we know that we don't need to set apart some time in order to do that. We can do that at any time. The fifth mindfulness exercise of mindful breathing is to create a feeling of joy. As a good practitioner, you should be able to create a feeling of joy whenever you want. You like a you can perform a miracle of joy. And the sixth is to bring in a feeling of happiness. Create a feeling of joy. Create a feeling of happiness. And how? If we master these four exercises, that becomes very easy. Because when we breathe in and out, and bring our mind back to our body, and release the tension in our body, and then we find ourselves established in the here and the now, and we are in a position to recognize the many conditions of joy and happiness that are available in the here and the now. More than we need in order to be joyful, more than we need in order to be happy. There is a belief that we don't have enough conditions of happiness. And there is a tendency to run into the future and looking for some more conditions of happiness. But if we go home to the here and the now and with mindfulness recognize the conditions of happiness and joy that are already there, we find that there are more than enough to be happy, to be joyful in the here and the now. The French have a song with the title "Qu'est-ce qu'on attend pour être heureux?" What do you have to wait in order to be happy? Happiness is possible in the here and the now. Because when we are back in the here and the now, we recognize so many conditions of happiness that are available in our body, in our feelings, and around us. So many wonders of life. Suppose we practice breathing in, I notice that I have eyes in good conditions. And to have eyes in good condition is wonderful. Suppose you have lost your eyesight, you cannot see anything. With eyes in good condition, you need only to open your eye, and there is a paradise of forms and colors always available to you. You can enjoy. You can enjoy the sunshine. Imagine you cannot see the sunshine. You live always in the dark. So mindfulness helps you to see that there is sunshine. How wonderful. It's a rolling hills. There are birds. There are trees. This beautiful planet. And I have a body. And my feet are strong enough for me to run and to walk. So many conditions of happiness. We don't need to have more conditions of happiness. If we take a pen and write down conditions of happiness that we already have, one page is not enough. 2 pages are not enough. 10 pages will not be enough. And that is meditation. So when you recognize the conditions of happiness, you can be happy right there, in the here and the now, joyful. In America, many people mix up joy, happiness with excitement. But excitement is not exactly happiness. When you are excited, there is not enough peace in you, and happiness is not real. Happiness, true happiness, is that you don't need to run anymore. There is a feeling of satisfaction being in the here and the now, recognizing that you have so many conditions to be happy, sitting there or walking there or standing there. So if we can do that, we can be happy, we can generate a feeling of happiness, a feeling of joy at any time. We can create happiness and joy not for us, for all, but also for other people. You remind them with your mindfulness, because mindfulness can be contagious. And you remind them that we are in a wonderful world, that they can touch the wonders of life that are available. And that make them happy. You light the the candle of happiness in each of them. Because in each of them there is a seed of mindfulness in them. And if you are joyful, happy, aware, well, you light up the lamp of happiness and joy also. This is an art. And this is not difficult. And you as a teacher, you can perform that miracle in just a few dozens of seconds, and you can make the students in your class happy. I have a student who was a professor of mathematics in Canada. He already passed away. But he came to Plum Village and learned practice of mindfulness, and he brought back the practice of mindfulness to Canada, and he brought it into his classroom. And the whole class profited greatly from the practice of mindfulness, of breathing. See, in the first session, they did not have a bell. So he said that every 15 minutes, one student in the front row will clap his hand, and then the whole class will stop and enjoy mindful breathing. And his class become a kind of family, very joyful, and they made a lot of progress. And then other class in the school, they imitate the same and made also progress. And then when he was at the age to retire, they asked him to stay on for a number of years in order to have the school. That is Toronto. And he enjoyed very much the work of teaching. He was able to transform his class into a family, and that can spread to the whole school. He has written a book, a small book, telling the story of his practice as a teacher. So it is possible for a school teacher to do that, to help their students to suffer less and to be happy. You help them to create, to generate a feeling of joy, and later on they will know how to create a feeling of joy by themselves. And we come to the seventh exercise, which is to become aware of a painful feeling, a painful emotion. This is the pedagogy of the Buddha. He teaches us how to generate a feeling of joy and happiness first. And then when we have that, we'll be stronger in order to handle the suffering in us. A practitioner knows how to handle his or her happiness. Because if you do not know how to handle your happiness can turn to be something else. How to nourish, how to preserve happiness, how to nourish and to preserve your love in order not to allow it to become something else, like hate, sourness, and so on. So a good practitioner knows how to handle happiness. And a good practitioner knows how to handle suffering. This is an art. And it begins with the practice of mindful breathing. Mindful breathing is an art, it's not hard labor. So the seventh exercise is breathing in, I'm aware of the painful feeling in me. You are not trying to run away from your from your painful feeling. This is very important, because most of the people in our society, including the young people, when they have a painful feeling, they try to run away. When they have a strong emotion, they try to run away. And how? They want to bring something else in order to cover up, including eating, listen to the music. They do anything in order not to be confronted with the suffering inside. And the supermarket provide us with everything that we can use in order to cover up the suffering inside. And by consuming this, we allow the suffering inside to grow more. We do not know how to handle our suffering. So in the light of the Buddhist teaching, to handle suffering, you have to use mindfulness. When a painful feeling arises, as a practitioner, we should not try to run away or to cover up the suffering. Because it is the teaching of the Buddha that if you know how to look deeply into the nature of your suffering, you see the way out. And if you try to run away from suffering, you have no chance. That is why the first noble truth is suffering, ill being. And it can be very instructive. You can learn a lot from suffering. That is why we have to learn that every time suffering arises, we have to go back and try to handle it. And how? And the way proposed by the Buddha is to practice mindful breathing or mindful walking in order to generate the energy of mindfulness. Suffering, pain, is a kind of energy that is not pleasant. And that is why you don't want to be with it, want to run away. Here, if you allowed the energy of pain, of suffering, to be alone in you, that's not good. Because you may be overwhelmed by it. And people who do not practice try to run away, try to cover up the suffering. There are people who are not hungry at all, but when they suffer, by eating something, they can forget for some time their suffering. And other people, they use novels, music, and so on. Or they may pick up the phone and talk to someone in order to forget the suffering. Or they may take a car and go somewhere and getting busy in order not to touch the suffering inside. But this practice is the opposite. When suffering arises, we practice mindful breathing in order to have the second source of energy. And with the second source of energy, we recognize and embrace our suffering. Breathing in, I know suffering is in me. There is a feeling, the painful feeling in me. Breathing out, I am embracing, I am holding the suffering in me. Breathing in, I say hello to my suffering. Breathing out, I say, I will take good care of you. It's like a mother when she hears the child or the baby crying, she knows that the baby suffers. So she put whatever she is holding and she goes to the room of the baby, and she pick up the baby, and she hold the baby tenderly into her arm. So a practitioner does exactly the same thing. When the painful feeling is arising, she stops doing things. What she does is to practice mindful breathing in order to have the energy of mindfulness. With the energy of mindfulness, she recognizes the energy of pain. Breathing in, I know the pain is in me. Breathing out, I'm embracing my pain with tenderness. You use mindfulness to hold your pain like a mother holding her ailing baby. And if you know how to do that, you suffer less in a few minutes. Because that is an encounter between two kinds of energies. Instead of trying to fight, to suppress the pain, you recognize, you allow it to be, you recognize it, and you embrace it tenderly. It's like the way you do when your room is too cold. You turn on your radiator, and the radiator begin to send out waves of warm air. The warm air is not trying to fight the cold air, come to embrace. And 5-10 minutes later, the cold air become warmer. So this is exactly the same. The energy of mindfulness and concentration, embracing the energy of pain. And the energy of mindfulness is the Buddha. Is the energy of the Buddha. Mindfulness, concentration, and insight are the essence of a Buddha. And you have a Buddha inside, baby Buddha inside. Ask the Buddha in you to manifest and to take care of the pain. Not fighting, suppressing, but helping, taking care. And these school teachers have to master this practice. When there is a strong emotion, we do the same. We are not afraid. Because we have ways in order to deal with a strong emotion. We need some insight. We need some practice. When the strong emotion arises, we say that you are only an emotion. An emotion is something that comes, stays from some time, and finally has to go away. And there are many young people who do not know how to handle a strong emotion. And they believe that the only way to end the emotion and the suffering is to go and kill themselves. And that is why so many young people commit suicide in our time. But if they know that an emotion is just one emotion, it's very tiny compared with our person. Our person is made of, with body, feelings, perceptions, mental formations, and consciousness. The territory is large. You are not only an emotion. You are much more than one emotion. And that is the insight you have to guard when the emotion comes up. Hello, my emotion. I know you are there. I will take care of you. And you practice mindful, deep abdomen breathing, and you know that you can handle that storm in you. Sit down in a lotus position or lie down and put your hand on your stomach and breathe in very deeply, breathe out very deeply, and become aware of the rising and falling of your abdomen. Stop all thinking. Breathing in, my abdomen is rising. Breathing out, my abdomen is falling. Completely concentrated on the rising and falling of your abdomen. And stop all thinking, because the more you think about it, the stronger your emotion will become. And during the practice, do not allow yourself to be on the level of thinking. Bring it down to the level of the breathing, to the level of the navel, and just become aware of the rising and falling of your abdomen. Stick to it. And you are safe. It's like a tree in standing in a storm. When you look at the top of the tree, you see that the branch, little branch and leaves are swaying violently back and forth under the effect of the wind. And you may have the impression that the tree is going to break, to be blown away. But when you direct your attention to the trunk of the tree, you know that the tree is firmly, deeply rooted, and you have another feeling. You know that the tree is going to stand the storm. So during the time the strong emotion is there, let us not dwell on the top, that is on the level of the thinking. Stop the thinking. Go down and embrace the trunk, and the trunk is down here. Embrace the trunk and just focus your attention 100% on the rise and fall of the abdomen. And you are safe. As far as you maintain mindful breathing and become aware only of the rising and falling of your abdomen, you are safe. Much more than one emotion. And with that practice, you can survive one emotion very easily. But let us not to wait until the emotion comes in order to begin the practice. You will naturally forget. We have to begin right now. And every day we practice 5 minutes or 10. And we will naturally remember to practice. And you can survive an emotion very easily. And we say that the next time a strong emotion like that comes, I'm not afraid anymore. I will not be afraid anymore because I know how to do it. And when we have mastered that, we can transmit it to our students. In class, you have to teach your student how to do it because many of them have strong emotions and they do not know how to handle. And many young people, they have the idea of suicide in their head. So please help them, prepare them. Your child, although very small, but you can teach her, teach him to practice. Darling, hold the hand of mommy. Let us breathe together. Breathing in. My stomach is rising. Right now, my stomach is falling, rising. Don't you see, darling? And you transmit to your child your energy of mindfulness. And every time your child has a crisis like that, you can help him or her to practice. And one day, they will be able to practice by themselves. And you can save their life by preparing now. So a teacher can do that with the students because to me, teachers and children have to get the time to share suffering, to understand the suffering of the students. And they will be interested in what to do, how to do in order to suffer less and to enjoy alive, and they may be able to bring their practice home to their family. We have organized retreats for young people. Their parents do not come, but when they get the transformation and healing, they go home and they help their parents with their practice. There have been many cases like that reported to us, that young people come into a retreat, go home, and help their parents to transform. So as teachers, we can very well help our students to practice, to handle a strong emotion, to handle a painful feeling. When they have confidence, they go home, they can help their parents. And this has happened during many of our retreats. So we should train ourselves that we could generate a joyful feeling at any time with mindfulness. Mindfulness is a source of joy. Mindfulness is a source of happiness because they help us to be in touch with many wonders of life in ourselves and around us. And a good practitioner knows how to handle, to take care of a painful feeling, a painful emotion. So the seventh exercise of mindful breathing is to be aware of pain. And the eighth is to embrace and release the tension in the pain. It's like the third, aware of the body, and the fourth, release tension in the body. The seventh, aware of pain, and the eighth, releasing the pain. And mindfulness does the work of recognizing, not suppressing, not fighting, just recognizing this is nonviolence. Because the pain is you, it's not your enemy. And mindfulness is you, mindfulness helping to transform the pain. A big brother and a young brother, a mother and her child. And mindfulness and concentration as energy can embrace the pain. In the morning, the lotus flower have not opened, and the sun is rising, and the sun send source of energy to the lotus flowers. And the sunshine, the sunlight, come for a visit. Not only the sunshine, go around the lotus, but in the form of a small grain, it's called photon. The sunshine penetrate one by one, grain into the lotus flower. The encounter between the sunshine and the lotus will cause the lotus to open. So this is the same, whether it is happiness or suffering. Mindfulness is the sunshine, embracing, penetrating. The encounter between two kinds of energies. And the energy of mindfulness hết pin rồi. The energy of mindfulness help recognize the suffering, smile to the suffering, and embrace the suffering. And as we continue to practice mindful breathing, mindful walking, our capacity of being mindful grow. Anytime we need that energy of mindfulness, it's concentration, it comes right away, because the seed of mindfulness in us has grown to become important. Every time we touch the seed of mindfulness in us by the practice of mindful breathing or walking, it provides us with enough energy of mindfulness in order for us to recognize and embrace the pain in us. So the exercise is to release pain. In the beginning, the mother pick up the baby and hold the baby tenderly. She does not know what is the cause of the suffering of the baby. But the fact that she's holding the baby are suffering. In the beginning, you don't know where that suffering has come. But the fact that we are able to recognize and hold it tenderly, we suffer less. Some relief is obtained. But if we continue with mindfulness and concentration, we will soon discover the nature and the roots of our pain and suffering. It's like a depression that you suffer. In beginning, you don't know why that depression has come. It's like it has come from the blue. But everything has a root. But if you know how to generate energy of mindfulness and concentration to recognize your depression, to embrace it, you suffer less already. And according to the teaching of the Buddha, when you are mindful and concentrated on looking into the nature of your depression, you find out how and where that depression has come. And in the Buddhist tradition, we say that nothing can survive without food, nutrients. The teaching on nutrients, there are four kinds of nutrients. You have been feeding your depression. Your depression in the beginning was very small and you don't notice it. But by consuming, by feeding, because every time you are exposed to many kind of informations and religion and so on, we consume. You consume many things, not only edible food, but sensorial impressions. We consume the collective energy of anger, of fear, of despair. We consume many things like that, but we are not aware. And we have been feeding our depression. And the practice is recommended by the Buddha is to embrace your depression with mindfulness and concentration to get a relief and look deeply to identify the source of nutriment that has brought the depression to you. The Buddha said this, what has come to be, namely your ill-being, your depression, what has come to be. If you know how to look deeply into its nature and identify the source of nutriment that has brought it into you, you are already on the path of transformation. It means that you have to identify the source of nutriments of your illness, of your ill-being. After you have identified the source of food that you have used to feed your illness, your ill-being, you begin to cut off that source. The Buddha said, nothing can survive without food. Your joy, your love cannot survive without proper food. Your hate, your anger also, your depression also. If they continue to be alive because you keep feeding them. And if you recognize the source of nutrients that you have used to feed them, and if you begin to cut off, it will slowly die, your depression, your ill-being. And that is what the Buddha said, nothing can survive without food, including your love, including your suffering. So in the beginning, mindfulness and concentration help us to suffer less. And if we continue to go deeper, mindfulness and concentration help us to identify the source of nutriment that is at the foundation of your ill-being. And if we make a decision to cut off that kind of nutriment, you feel better. That those of us who come to the winter retreat and refuse to receive emails. Dear friends, before going to the winter retreat, she sent an email. Dear friends, I will not be able for emails during the 3 months retreat. And stopping the emails during 3 weeks, 4 weeks, she feel much better. Because many of the emails are not good nutriments for her. So if we are sick, if we suffer, because we have been feeding our suffering, our sickness. And that is why we have to remember what the Buddha said. Nothing can survive without food. Therefore, the eighth exercise is just to get a relief. But there are other exercises of mindful breathing that follow, that will help you to identify the source of suffering, the kind of practice of concentration and insight that can help you to eradicate, to uproot the suffering. And you are invited to continue with the sutra on mindful breathing. Because in that sutra, the Buddha proposed 18 exercises. And today, we only learn about 8 to begin with. Many of us suffer because of our relationship with the other person. And our students may suffer also of that kind of relationship. Many of them cannot talk to their parents. No communication is possible. So we should be able to help them. And there is a wonderful practice. And if we know how to master it, we will be able to transmit to our students. That is practice of compassionate listening and loving speech. In Plum Village, we used to sponsor groups of Palestinians and Israelis to come and practice with us. Very difficult to get visas for Palestinians. But thanks to our good relationship with the Foreign Ministry of Foreign Affairs, we were able to get a number of visas for these Palestinians. And always it's very difficult to, in the first few days, because the two groups, they don't like to look at each other. They are suspicious of each other. They don't feel good when they look at each other because they have suffered a lot. And they believe that the suffering has been brought to them by the other side. This is very difficult. So in the first 4 or 5 days, the practice we offer to both groups is the practice of the first eight exercises of mindful breathing to help them to release the tension, to help them to get in touch with the wonders of life, in order for them to get some nourishment and relaxation. And both groups practice separately. But during the second week, we initiate them into the practice of deep listening. And the practice is like this. You should be able to tell the other group the suffering you have gone through. The other group need to listen to you. But you have to help them. You have to use the kind of speech that can help them to understand you. If you use too much criticism, blaming, accusation, the other group will not be able to listen to you. So out of compassion, you tell them of your suffering, your children, your adult. You have the right to tell them everything. Every kind of suffering you have undergone. But do not blame, do not accuse. Just help them to understand. And this to help you to speak out in order to suffer less, that you will help them to understand. And therefore you have to use the practice of loving speech. Do not blame, do not accuse, do not be sour or bitter. Just tell them the suffering that you have undergone. And then we instruct the other group that we have to listen to them, because if you listen to them with compassion, you help them suffer less. You know that not only on your side you suffer, but you look on their side, they suffer a lot. They have a lot of suspicion, bitterness, fear in them. So the practice is to listen to them with compassion. And this is possible. You listen out of compassion. You allow them to have a chance to speak out in order to suffer less. Because you know that they have their own suffering. And what they tell you may water the seed of fear, anger in you. And that is why you have to practice using the method of compassionate listening. You have to practice mindfulness of compassion. You have to remember just one thing during the whole session. I listen to them with only one purpose. Giving them a chance to speak out so that they suffer less. Just remember one thing. I listen just because of one purpose, to allow the machine to suffer less. And if you can maintain that compassion alive, and then what they say will not touch off the suffering, the anger in you, you are protected by the energy of compassion. Mindfulness of compassion is important in order to be able to listen. If we are a therapist, psychotherapist, we know that compassionate listening is very important. just listen to them half an hour and they suffer less already. But you have to be truly there in the here and the now and with compassion in your heart. Very healing, that kind of practice. And if you are if you are able to maintain that mindfulness of compassion alive during the time of listening, you are protected. And what they say, even if they come from wrong perception, what they say might be false, but that did not touch off the anger, the irritation in you, because you are protected. Because you are aware that you are listening like this with only one purpose. You help them. You say that, well, they say wrong things, but you are not going to stop them. If you are going to stop them and correct them, you transform the session into a debate and it ruins everything. So this is the time to listen only. Later on in next week, we may have a chance to tell them, to give them some information so that they may correct their perceptions, but not now. Now is just to listen with compassion, to allow them to suffer less. This is called mindfulness of compassion. And you are protected by it. So even if the other person is telling things that are not true, that is full of bitterness, full of blame and accusation, you are not irritated because you are protected by compassion. And the Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara has that kind of power. She can listen with compassion. And we have, each of us has a seed of compassion in us. We are capable of being compassionate. And during the time we listen, we allow that compassion to manifest and to protect us. One side, trying to use loving speech. On one side, using compassionate listening. And the outcome is wonderful. While listening, you recognize that they, on the other side, they have suffered almost exactly the same kind of suffering that all outside we have. Before we think that only on this side we have suffered that. But as we listen to them, we see that they have suffered exactly the same thing. Fear, anger, suspicion, and so on. So you begin to see them as human beings like you. And when you begin to see them as human beings who suffer, the intention to punish is no longer there. And you begin to look at them with the eyes of compassion. And you may be motivated by the desire to say something or to do something so that they can suffer less. That is the transformation you get during the time you practice compassionate listening. When you look at them, you suffer much less because you have been able to see the suffering in them and you see them as human beings like you. And when you look at them like that, they see your eyes. They feel that you are looking at them with love and not suspicion, fear, anger anymore. So transformation takes place on both sides. And you know that you have a chance to speak out also next week. And you tell them about your suffering and they will listen. So this practice of mindful, of compassionate listening and loving speech is very important in order to liberate us from our fear, anger, hate, and so on. And it has the power to restore communication. It is possible to do like that, because in the beginning we might notice that they have many wrong perceptions, because they have suffered so much. That is why in their way of speaking there is still some bitterness, some accusation and so on. But because we are practicing mindfulness and compassion, we do not interrupt them. We allow them to speak out and to suffer less. And the outcome is that we recognize them as living beings having a lot of suffering. We suffer less. We have no more any intention to punish. We have the intention to help. We suffer less. And we say that we can help them by providing them with some kind of information that can help them to see that it's not our intention to make them suffer. And on our side, there is also fear, suspicion that make us difficult for them. So many of us in the community, we sit with the two groups, and we contribute our mindfulness and our concentration so that they can speak and listen the way we wish. Because many of us are used to the practice of mindful breathing, mindful sitting, compassionate listening. So our presence among the two groups is very important. We create a kind of collective energy of mindfulness and concentration and compassion. And we support the two groups. And finally, the tension is gone. And both groups begin to practice walking meditation together, sharing a meal together. And they hold hands together. That miracle happened here in Plumbridge several times. And on the last day of the retreat, they always come up as one group to report about the outcome of their practice to the whole Sangha. They always promise that when they go back to the Middle East, they will organize the practice like that so that other Israelis and Palestinians will have a chance to come and practice and suffer less. We have Sanghas over there. And from time to time, we send brothers and sisters to go there in order to organize a retreat. So, if we have a difficult relationship with our partner, or with our father, or with our mother, with our sister, with our brother, it's always possible to restore communication and to reconcile with the practice of compassionate listening and love and speech. And I think we school teachers, if we master these techniques, not only we have happiness, but we can help our students to do so. First of all, we improve the relationship between teacher and students. And then we can help them to use the practice in order to restore communication with the father, with the mother, and so on. And that is why school teachers can do so much in order to change the world. And we have a very noble occupation, noble thing to do. And it is not as difficult as we may think, the practice. The miracle of reconciliation always take place in our retreats. In any kind of retreats, whether it is in Germany, or America, or Spain, or Italy, the miracle of reconciliation always take place in our retreats. And the format of the retreat is very much the same. Because when you come to a retreat, you practice releasing the tension, You practice touching the wonders of life. You practice handling strong emotions and looking at the suffering inside in order to understand the suffering outside. And that is why on the fifth or sixth day, practitioners are asked to apply the practice to reconcile with the other person. If the other person is in a retreat, that would be very easy, because she has been exposed to the same kind of teaching and practice. She will be able to see the suffering in you very easily. But if the other person is not there in the retreat, you are allowed, you are authorized to use your mobile telephone. To practice compassionate listening and loving speech. Everywhere we go and offer a retreat, that kind of miracle happens. It's in Macau, in Hong Kong, in South Korea, in Japan, in Malaysia, in Indonesia, in Taiwan, in Germany, in Switzerland, everywhere. On the fifth day, we say, ladies and gentlemen, you have up to midnight tonight in order to practice. If the other person is not there, you can use your telephone. And I remember that in a retreat in northern Germany, the next day, four German gentlemen came to me and reported that the night before, they had used the telephone and they have been able to reconcile with their fathers. One of them said, "Dear Thay, I could not believe that I can talk to my father like that. I was so angry at him. I would never think that I can speak to him gently like that. But last night, I did." I had a little doubt when I composed a number. But when I hear his voice, I suddenly and naturally speak very gently to him. He did not know that because he has been exposed to the good watering of the good seed in him during the first 5 days of the retreat. He has been able to see the suffering in his father by touching his own suffering. And that is why naturally, when he hears the voice of his father, he was able to use loving speech. And all of them were able to reconcile with their father in just 1 or 2 hours. The things that they could not do during many years. It's a miracle. And all of us can perform that miracle if we master the techniques, the practice. I think peace negotiations are difficult because they do not follow this format. If you are politicians, and then next time when you organize a peace negotiation, you should not begin with negotiation right away. You should allow people to practice mindful breathing and releasing the tension, and share meals together and listen to the suffering of each other. And after 1 week or 10 days like that, well, negotiation will become very fruitful, because you understand your own suffering and the suffering of the other groups. You can come to an agreement about what to do in order to promote peace to both sides. Hopefully in the future, any candidate to the government should be able to attend a retreat in order to learn all these things. And in the School of Political Science, we should be able to transmit this kind of practice to students. I would like to share with you some teaching and practice about dying. How to die. Happily, peacefully. We have learned that in our mind, to die means from someone you become no one. From the realm of being, you pass into the realm of non-being, which is that is not right being. When you practice walking meditation, you notice that there are dead leaves covering the ground. And a dead leaf can be the object of our meditation. I don't think that the leaf, the falling leaf, suffer. They're just going back to Mother Earth in order to be reproduced again. So all of us are like a leaf. We spend some time on the trees, enjoying the sunshine, the rain, the wind. And we nourish the tree. What we have done as a leaf during 9 months have penetrated in the tree, and we continue in the tree. And the leaf is just a very small part of us. It's like the pot of tea. After having drunk 3, 4 a cup of tea, well, the essence, the most wonderful part of tea has entered into my body, and what is left there is just a little bit of the tree, of the tea. So a leaf spending 9 months with the tree has absorbed the gas, the sunshine, has enjoyed very much being the leaf, but in the meantime, they have produced a lot in order to nourish the tree. And if we have the eyes of the Buddha, we can see the leaf continue in the tree. And what is falling there is just a very small part of it. And that part is being integrated into the earth in order to nourish the tree. Imagine the earth is the tree, and we are a leaf. We think that the earth is the earth, and we are outside of earth, of the earth. But in fact, we are inside of the earth. We might think that someday we will go back to the earth. That those of us who think that when we die, we go to another place. like the Pure Land of Buddha in the western direction, or you go to the Kingdom of God. But many of us, when we look deeply, we see that the earth seems to be the most beautiful place to be. Astrophysicians, when they look into the cosmos, they have not found anything as beautiful as our planet Earth. And I know that Earth is my home. Earth is a mother, and I'm part of Mother Earth. Sitting or walking, I do not see that I am out of Mother Earth. I am inside of Mother Earth. I don't need to die in order to go back to Mother Earth. I am in Mother Earth right now. And Mother Earth is in me. So you might like to try this exercise, breathing in. I know Mother Earth is in me. And that is true. You don't have to imagine. Mother Earth is in you. Breathing out, I know that I am in Mother Earth and you are in Mother Earth. You are not outside. You don't have to go back. You are already back to Mother Earth. The Earth, Mother Earth includes the atmosphere, the life sphere, and the atmosphere. So we are inside Mother Earth. We are not outside. We cannot say that I will go back to Mother Earth. You are already in Mother Earth. You are a part of her, and she is in you. So when you ask the question, where shall I go when I die? You can say that I go back to Mother Earth, but you don't have to go back to Mother Earth because you are already in Mother Earth. Imagine we are a cell in our body. And as a cell in the body, we do our best in order to nourish our body. And birth and death seem to happen every moment in our body. Birth and death are notions. And looking deeply into the nature of birth and death, we see birth does not exist, death does not exist. Even scientists have declared that nothing is born, nothing dies. Suppose you play with a kaleidoscope. You see a very wonderful symmetric image, so beautiful. Very beautiful image. And when you make a movement, that image disappears. Can we describe it as death or not? That is only a manifestation. And after that manifestation, there is another manifestation that is equally beautiful. Nothing is lost at all. And we are a manifestation. It's so beautiful. And Mother Earth has helped us to manifest that way. And if we stop that manifestation, we manifest otherwise. There's no birth and no death. It's wonderful to be a cloud. But it's also wonderful to be the rain falling, right? So why, speaking of death, there's only manifestation after manifestations. There's no death. No death, no fear. In the beginning, we say that there is birth and death. But birth and death always go together. There is no birth without death. There is no death without birth. It's like left and right, above and below, consciousness and objects of consciousness. That is why we have to learn to cultivate right view. Right view is that birth cannot be without death, and death cannot be without birth. Our idea is that life is here, birth is here, and death will come much later, in 100 years. That is wrong view. Birth and death take place at the same time. Wherever there is birth, there is death. It's like left and right, before and after, inside and outside. They are pairs of opposite. They always manifest at the same time. This we have learned last time already. So when we look into our body, we see that death is taking place at every moment. At any moment, there are new cells that manifest. And at that very moment, there are cells that stop manifesting in order for other cells to manifest. And that is the truth. Biologists, they see that birth and death of the cells happen in every moment. So it's wrong to say that this is only life and death is much later. The day I die, no? The day I die is today. Because to die and to be born is what happened in every moment. In this moment, there are many cells dying in me and in you. And we don't have time to organize funerals for them. There's so many of them dying. And there are many new cells are born. We don't have enough time to celebrate their birth. So birth and death, they happen right here and right now, at every moment. And the idea that now only life, death is much later, is not true. And we have to see that wherever is death, there is birth. Death cannot be without birth. This is very important. The death of something is the birth of something. The picture you see in your kaleidoscope, if it disappears, it gives rise to another picture. And that is right view. And we begin with the notion of birth and death. Birth and death are always together at the same time. We are dying, we are being born every moment. And then after that, we can go further. We can go further. The notion of birth and death are just notions. Reality is free from the notion of birth and death. Rien ne se crée, rien ne se fait. Rien ne se perd. Tout se transforme. Tout se transforme. It means everything changes. So you may like to lie on the ground and get in touch with Mother Earth. Mother Earth, I am in you. I'm dying and I'm being born at the same time, and you are always there. You produce me as a wonderful manifestation, and you receive me back, and you reproduce me again, and that happens in every second. So learning to die is something very nice. Learning to die and learning to be born at every moment. And the earth is available there. Touch the earth and experience your nature of no birth and no death. That is the cream of Buddhist teaching. And when you touch your nature of no birth, your death, no death, you are no longer a victim of anxiety and fear. And joy becomes possible at every moment. Breathing in, I know that Mother Earth is in me. She is a great Bodhisattva. Breathing out, I know I am in Mother Earth. And Mother Earth and me, our nature is nature of no birth and no death. And this is possible. And if we have chance, we will learn the exercise of mindful breathing that followed, and they are about no birth, no death, the kind of meditation, the kind of concentration that will lead us to touch the nature of no birth and no death in us and in the cosmos. Let us enjoy walking meditation. It's so beautiful outside.